listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Are you ever?
Who are you, Paul Strolley?
Who are you?
I'm Michael Sterling.
You are Michael.
I think
Sterling.
So.
You're not Michael.
I was
Sterling.
When I woke up today.
You're not Michael Sterling, but you're an amazing facsimile.
Really,
you pulled it off. You're like his alter ego.
Well,
Mickey Sterling.
Mick Sterling.
Yeah,
Mick Sterling.
Mick Sterling. The new sandwich that's available at everyone's favorite fast food restaurant. The new Mick Sterling.
That's
yes.
It. Yeah.
What would a sandwich named after you be? What would be in it?
Gosh, ham.
I don't mean to put you up. Well, the ham is sort of a given.
Yeah. What would a gosh? You know, I like hamburgers, so yeah, it'd probably be a burger.
Just
some
a
great
burger.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, actually, being an Italian ham, I would have to be prosciutto.
You would.
Yes.
That's a very very nice delicate way to put it.
Yeah. Well, you know me, Michael. I'm
all
pure,
delicate.
Pure delicacy. Yeah.
Exactly.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Yes, we are. And in studio today, we have with us two electrifying forces. I'm very excited about this, Michael. Two electrifying forces of film, television, and theater currently in rehearsal for her co-starring role in the Glendale Center Theater production of On Golden Pond, opening July 12th, the lovely Salome Jens is with us.
Hello. The applause already?
Yeah, already.
So you don't have to do anything. See?
Oh, fantastic.
And the same can be said of our second guest, Paul, known worldwide for his countless starring and guest starring roles on screen and on Broadway, one of America's most distinguished actors, Andrew Prine, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, Andrew.
He's bowing.
He's on radio, but he's bowing. That impresses me.
Yeah, he's old school. Yeah. Well, welcome, both of you. We are thrilled to have you both in the studio.
Well, thank you. It's our pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Paul and I always start every show with kind of recanting our week.
Yeah.
Because we go a week without really almost talking to each other, and then we speak to each other frantically on Mondays. And
we used to talk to one another more frequently.
A little bit,
but
we had
both
a little more
got
time.
Too busy, yeah, which is a good thing. Because I really didn't care for speaking to you that often.
Oh, thank you very much.
I much prefer these short, manic Mondays.
Okay.
Yes.
And we're going to change that at the end of the hour. We'll make a little announcement about that.
Yes, oh, that's right. That's
so
right.
How was your week, by the way?
My week was good.
And how's your beautiful wife?
My beautiful wife is just as beautiful as ever.
She and speaking of beautiful wives, Mr. Andrew Prine has a beautiful wife sitting out there.
She has a beautiful wife, and he has a beautiful co-star as well.
He certainly does.
Yeah.
We're in the midst
He wins at work, and he wins at home.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. Lucky boy.
But no, Monica's very, very
she good.
Yeah, she's good. We're going back to Chicago soon, so we're going to visit some family there.
Yeah.
And was a lovely week. Last night, I indulged too much, but I didn't indulge in
the solace of the grape.
No, I indulged too much in food. We have a neighbor in our building. I live in a condo, and we have a neighbor named Gustavo, and his mother, he's from Argentina.
Oh, yeah.
His mother comes in from Argentina quite frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes empanadas. And she makes
fantastic.
Good empanadas.
Yeah.
I mean, like, right home empanadas. So she always has us over when we go, I went over, and I had two empanadas, and then I had two more,
mm-hmm.
and then I had two more.
Oh, my.
And then I had another one.
Wow.
It's seven empanadas. It's seven empanadas. And you know, empanadas are not like, it's not like a little artichoke salad. This
right.
is, you know, with beef and corn and the breading and everything. And keep in mind, with that, two different little salads she made. One with pineapple and hearts of palm, and one with meat and cheese and vegetables. And this morning I woke up and I don't eat meat very often.
Mm.
So the stomach was just like, It was a conversation with my stomach and myself, because the stomach was just like, what are you making me do
exactly.
this early in the day?
Yeah.
It was just like,
you got to pay attention
yes,
to that.
Yes, yes. So, but it was delicious and worth everything. How about your week?
It was a bittersweet weekend, 7 weeks of Annie. I directed Annie at the Glendale Center Theater.
So the production that just closed,
yes.
You directed that?
Yeah. Just closed on Saturday evening.
I didn't know we were that connected.
Yeah, we are.
Oh, and I didn't see it. We didn't get to see it.
I wish you had. It was glorious.
Killer reviews.
It was, yeah. No. And amazing reviews on top of it. But the little girls, which there are 7 of, inclusive of Annie, all of them by intermission were laying on the floor of their dressing room, holding each other and crying.
Oh.
Because they were so upset that was the last time they were going to see each other for a while. The process, you know, this is 3 months went from the time that you cast the show to the time that you finish rehearsing it, and we had a 7-week run. So and at the end of the evening in the lobby, when the audience departs the theater, you know, the cast goes out into the lobby to greet the audience and thank them for coming. And the girls could not contain themselves there either. They just were weeping during every thank you to a audience member. They were crying and holding on to each other.
Oh, man.
It was so charming, so adorable.
Yeah.
But it was a lovely experience, and the theater had not done that particular show for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very big hit, and the families and the kids and everybody that came to see it, it was something to remember for me.
Well, yeah. I tell you, and you know, given the reviews that you got, I know that you put a tremendous amount of work. We joked about it earlier, but one of the reasons that Michael and I haven't been able to chat as often is because his dance card is always full, but it was especially full during this thing. And you won it back in spades. I mean, you just every single the reviews have been phenomenal, were phenomenal, and your attendance was selling like hotcakes.
Record attendance for the theater.
Really?
This year for the season, yes.
Wow.
How exciting.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very, very exciting.
Are you a director primarily?
No, not at all. So I really, I'm kind of a jack of all trades, and public relations has certainly been the my ballywick, so to say, and the foundation of my company. And production I've added recently, as I have a very popular supper club here in, now it's in North Hollywood in the NoHo Arts District, you know, just off the street
yes,
from the Television
course.
Academy.
Well, and so you have a club there?
A supper club, back which harkens back to the old days. Supper club. So
what's the name of your club?
It's called Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal.
There's a wonderful restaurant called the Federal right next to the El Portal.
Yes.
And it's the oldest building
in the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah. And the second floor, Michael does performances up there, and it's sort of a cabaret, Great American Songbook, Broadway.
Yeah, we present the best of Broadway performers in concert and nightclub artists who sing the Great American Songbook.
And do you sing?
Oh, I do. I don't sing anymore. I mean, I just
come on,
Michael.
Voice.
Give us a number, Michael. Come on.
5, 6, 7, 8.
There's the number right there. 8. Yeah. No, but it's a passion of mine to keep the art form alive.
Yeah.
Rosie Clooney was my mentor in music, so.
Oh my goodness.
Gotta pay tribute to her. Yeah. I always said to her, Rosemary, I'm going to do this one day, open a club. She said, don't ever forget, because it takes people like you to pass down the music, you know, to the next generations, which is exactly what we do.
And the Federal is just sort of the next step for Michael, because for years he was it was Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's on Tujunga.
I know there. That boy at Vitello's.
And Michael had the Upstairs Supper Club there, and then it just got too big and it just grew too much and had to get a larger venue.
Wonderful.
So being on the show, I assume we'll get about a 20% discount if we drop.
I might even get more than that.
I'll tell you. I'm the co-host tonight, okay? 20%. No, I'm kidding. Michael's been very generous with me. Very generous. But let's get to our guest,
absolutely,
shall we?
Absolutely. I cannot wait.
Not only has she worked with such Hollywood leading men as Burt Reynolds and Rock Hudson, but also television's James Daly and Chad Everett. From a career that began by studying acting with Herbert Berghoff and dance with Martha Graham, she is a consummate, critically acclaimed, award-winning actress, film, television, and theater. She's done it all, and is getting ready to open July 12th as Ethel Thayer, starring opposite Andrew Prine in On Golden Pond at the Glendale Center Theater. Please welcome Miss Salome Jen.
I'm overwhelmed.
We carry them with us everywhere we go.
What a good idea.
How nice to have you in studio.
Well, thank you.
And thank you for doing this on a day, well, ordinarily in theater, of course, Monday is a day off. But I don't think it's a day off in your case today. You said you were rehearsing.
Not today. We came directly from rehearsal.
With your wonderful director, Gloria Gifford, and she let you out to come and see us.
That's right.
Thank you, Gloria.
Yes, thank you, Gloria. Salome, I wanted to ask you, when you came in to the lobby, when we were speaking earlier, you were talking about how it's a physically taxing show.
Yes, this one is.
And I'm curious about that. Can you elaborate on that? Because one thinks of On Golden Pond and doesn't immediately think about it being physically taxing. And I'm curious what.
Well, first of all, it really is a comedy. It's a love story, but it's a comedy.
It's a comedy.
And when you're doing comedy, I'm sure you know, it takes a lot of energy.
Right.
And so that there is, you know, there is the kind of, one doesn't get to rest for long.
Particularly,
I don't, because I'm this very busy lady who keeps the ball rolling, keeps everything rolling. Andy can sit back and kind of enjoy the space,
but I
get to move the space.
Right, you're the locomotive.
I'm the locomotive, absolutely. What I'm noticing is that it really takes a lot of energy.
Yeah. You're right. The comedy thing is like you're pretty much always a coiled spring with comedy. You're always wound and ready to go because it's that energy that keeps everything going.
Yep.
Yeah.
And plus the fact with this thing, it is a lovely story and it is, you know, it is a love story.
Yeah.
And it's about a family and a family that is, you know, at a crossroads. So, right.
But that is an interesting point you made, because until you just said it, of course it all came back to me from seeing the film years ago, but until you said it, it's a very, very funny, funny story. It's very poignant, obviously, but also, you know, there's a lot of great comedy in there. And
that
doesn't immediately pop into one's head when you think on it.
No, I don't think so.
The film was very different than the play in that sense. And I didn't notice that the film had that much comedy in it, but there was between the two of them. But nevertheless, as we're doing it, do you feel that, Andy, that it surprises me how the comedy is there, how fun it is.
The stage play is much funnier and not tailored to any particular person as the film might have been.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about that. What do you see as the, like, are there any glaring examples of that? Is it just overall, or is there?
Well, the concentration in the movie was with the father and the daughter.
Right.
But that's not what the play's about.
Oh, okay. Okay. And... Okay, now your point makes a lot. Your point, Andrew, makes a lot of sense. Oh, okay. Now I understand. I didn't quite understand.
So there's conflict with the daughter and the father.
There is some, but finally.
And he's hard to please, the character.
Not only that,
Norman.
But he's hit a moment in his life where it looks like it might be over.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, certainly all that discussion is going on, and it also is very upsetting to her, because she wants the family first of all to come together. She wants the daughter to be a part of the family, but she's also concerned about his health and what's going on with him because he's beginning to fade.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So she is, you know, she is pushing ahead. She's trying to keep him alive, I think. Yeah.
Well, I remember seeing the film and, you know, Katharine Hepburn and...
Henry Fonda.
Yeah. Oh, they were wonderful.
Amazing. Yeah. And then Jane, of course, as well. Brenda Dietlein is playing that role, isn't she? The Jane
Yeah,
Fonda
she's playing
role.
I think she's sharing it with another actress.
Oh, she
actress.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's a lovely actress. This is something kind of a return for her to come back to the theater. She's Tim Dietlein's wife and really the producer of the theater.
Oh.
And I met very briefly the other day Blake Boyd. Just happened to run into him in the lobby as we were starting Annie, and he was leaving rehearsal, I think. And I know him from television, and he's a lovely guy. So you've got a great cast.
Yes, we do.
A great cast of people.
They're wonderful.
Let me ask you something. You are both come from theater and certainly have done your share of it, and film and television. Do you have a preference? I always like to ask this. Do you have a preference? Where do you like to live emotionally? In the theater, on the theater stage?
Well,
or do you find
for me,
film
you know, television? I came out of the New York theater, so yes. That was my career, and that's where my career began, and I feel that that's where I belong. I've done lots of television and a lot of movies, but my real career was in the theater. So that is my first love, and that is, I think, where the actor is most challenged. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's not a matter of what you can, what you prefer. It's just what you do well.
Right.
You know, and I, as I say, film is another animal.
Yeah.
And I, and not that it's not wonderful, but as I say, the actor is really challenged in the theater.
Right.
I'm fully challenged here. You don't get to do this again. You go on and you go.
That's right.
And
that's right.
There's also no filters. It's like when you perform in a film, your performance will be filtered through 10 or 12 other, hundreds of other crafts,
and,
whatever. And then you're on stage. And
director making other choices, and they can change your voice. I mean, they can do a lot of things.
Right.
But they can't do that in the theater. You better be ready.
Yeah. That's a trade-off for having to get it right.
But the payoff, I think, at least was for me whenever I did theater, was, you know, the end of the evening. And you know, they tell you right there. The audience tells you they like it, they didn't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel that energy.
That immediate.
And through the performance, you feel it, of course.
Yeah.
You know when you're on the mark and when you're off the mark.
Yeah.
And
well, what is wonderful is to know that somehow, if you've affected an audience, if they've had an experience, that's where your gratification comes finally, because somehow that's to be that involved with an audience, because it's a connection you make with the audience. And it's going to be interesting in this theater, because in, you know, it's all those people, they own you in that on the round.
Yes, they do.
So that's, you know, it's going to be very interesting experience. Not that I haven't done the round before, because I have, but boy, you know, you get, you see that.
They're right there.
They're devouring you.
They are, and they're also, though, very attentive at the same time, and they don't miss a beat anything at all.
They see everything.
Yeah, they do.
You know, we mentioned, we were talking about the, well, before we went on the air, we were talking about one-person shows, and I find that that dynamic, when I was doing mine, it always played better, in not necessarily in the round, but like Glendale has this the stage low, and the audience vommed up away, you know, from them. And I always found that the intimacy factor, the audience just dug it so much more when it, because they weren't like, I don't want to say threatened, but you weren't some person who was up, you know, to impress them. They were, the intimacy that that, that style of venue creates is just like, I mean, it's perfect for a show like
this. Oh, absolutely.
You know, have you found that the, you know, when you rehearse at Glendale, they have a, they have an area that's very similar to the stage or identical
to
the...
They have a rehearsal room.
That, but it's...
You can set up the stage setting, but it's not like the theater. It's just a rehearsal room.
Okay.
It's the same dimension.
But it is the same
stage
dimension.
Okay. Itself. I mean, the room's a little bit larger.
It's
than
all flat. I mean...
Yeah, okay.
Mirrors, you know, typical rehearsal room.
Right.
But it's the right same size of the stage.
Right. Which would be very, very important in a space like that.
Exactly.
No, a space like that, especially when you're, you know, doing it in the round. It's just a... I mean, did you encounter a lot of difficulty in staging any because of that style?
Well, I was familiar with it, having directed there in the past. But, you know, what you use are the extensions of the stage, which are, of course, the playing areas that may occur on a staircase. I don't know whether you're using that in your production.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
And one of the balconies, at least one of them, turns into a possible performance space.
Mm-hmm.
So you just, the point is, everything has to keep moving in the round. You,
it's a dance.
The actors moving.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
You can't stay in one place too long, because that side of the, you know, the other side of the audience is not going to see you. So it's, that's the tricky part of it, because as a director, you're not only dealing with the performances of the actors on an emotional level, but you're also playing a bit of a traffic cop in keeping it all going. People aren't just entering from the left and the right.
Yeah. You know? Much, much more, like you said, a dance, much more choreography than just straight blocking.
Very much so.
I'm going to let people know how they can get tickets for this. We'll do this again before the end of the hour, obviously. But the performances for On Golden Pond are July 12th through August 11th. They'll be presented Thursday through Saturday evenings at 8, with Sunday matinees at 3. Additional matinees will be presented Sunday, July 22nd and Sunday, July 29th at 3. Ticket ranges, this astounds me about this place. I mean, to get this quality of theater for $20 to $25, especially in this day and age, is just unheard of. Ticket range, $20 to $25. I mean, that we always talk about this, but I mean, you go in, you hear $20 or $25, and you expect to go in as like, oh, this is going to be like one of those.
And they just raised their prices for the first time in a few years.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Glendale Center Theater is located at 324 North Orange Street in Glendale. Reservations or ticket purchases may be made by calling 818-244-8481. That's 818-244-8481. Of course, online at glendalecentertheater.com. We should point out that both center and theater have the R-E spelling, glendalecentertheater.com. Box offices, Monday through Saturday, 10 to 6.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Chock full of information.
Chock full of information. Maybe too much information.
No.
Too much?
Yeah, no, I mean, people, I'm one
of let's add more. The restaurants nearby, they have great restaurants.
I'm one of those people that likes to know everything. Tell me everything.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Salome, you also, you started in New York, and you were studying with the amazing Mr. Berghoff and
my primary training was at the Actors Studio with Lee Strasberg, and that's where I met Andy. I mean, we
known each other since since that time period.
Yes.
My gosh. How old were you when you started working?
Oh, probably about 22.
Wow.
Yeah. But as I say, that was my major connection to the theater, and he was the brilliant man behind, I think, all of us. I mean, Berghoff was wonderful, and I really enjoyed, because I, you know, couldn't get into the studio right off. I had to audition. I think I auditioned 8 times before I got in. So, but it was Strasberg, and it was the Actors Studio that was the most important part of my training, and continues to be. I'm now the Associate Artistic Director of the West Coast, and it continues to be a very important part of our lives, because we carry the light for the next generation, because there's not. You know, the art of the actor is being destroyed by television, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And sometimes theater gets destroyed by television,
That's
too.
Right.
And television actors, actually, at some point in this day and age, I'm not referring to yourselves at all, but, you know, these kids that come off of a series that they've been on for 15 minutes and suddenly they're starring on Broadway.
That's right.
Because of that 15 minutes.
Or it wasn't even a series, it was a reality show.
Exactly.
You know, and that's why they're,
It just breaks my heart, except... I always say, whatever it takes to get people out to theater, to live theater, that's important.
Especially in this town. Because it's so much more difficult to get people out to live theater here than, say, in New York or Chicago. Because
it's changing, though.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Slowly but surely. Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, so many of the productions that are done now have to get much easier to start here because it's not as expensive to get them done.
Yeah.
So a lot of the new writers are using, at least 170 small theaters.
Mm.
So that's amazing. And some very good work going on in some of those theaters.
There are. Yeah. There is a lot of good work. And it's one of the, I say this back in about Glendale Center Theater, while those other theaters, 170, many of them being Equity Waiver size, they still, though, you know, struggle to find audiences. Mm-hmm. And Glendale, for 65 years, has been pulling those audiences in, and that's extraordinary.
You know what's crazy? I've been living in... I live in Silver Lake.
Yeah.
I have been living here for 30-some years, and I never knew that theater was there.
Do you know that it's the oldest continuously operating theater in the United States?
I know. We found out when we got there. I was just stunned. I thought, how did we not know this? Because they've kept it a secret.
Oh, this little gem. It's the community knew about it and the surrounding community.
But you just answered your own question, Michael. Yeah. You were saying about how they've... The whole fact that they have been in continuous operation with a show running all the time, that's why they have such good audiences, because it's a constant. People know it will be there.
Right.
They have their holiday traditions. They do the Christmas Carol each year. And you said that for a Christmas time, they deck it out like a movie set.
It snows outside of the theater when the audience leaves the theater at the end of a Christmas
Carol.
Yeah, well, it's a lovely theater, and they do run it very beautifully.
Yes, they do. They're very, very good-hearted. And
there's a vibe there, too. Yeah. I noticed when I saw 1776 there. You just go in and you feel like everyone wants to be there who's there. There's a real affection and there's a real familial kind of, and I'm Italian, so these things are important to me. The family.
Of course.
You take care of that thing for me, by the way?
I did.
Good.
I did.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay.
Funny man, Paul Strolley.
No, just I'm let's see. I just want to throw that out there. We'll do it again at the end. GlendaleCenterTheater.com, because people should know about this production.
Yes, indeed. They should. And Glendale Center Theater, for many people, it's their first time there, too. But you know, wait till you do your Saturday matinees. You're going to see buses lining up in front of theater, dropping hundreds of people off. Yeah. It's amazing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Matinees are big there?
They have a very large subscription base there. But like all theaters, you know, they'll take more subscriptions and more, you know.
Yeah.
They deserve it out there. They really
work
very hard for their
dollar. You've only said good things about them.
Yeah. Always. We have an arts calendar. Are you going to kick this off?
I can kick it off if you want.
Please do. Okay. Actually, you are the arts calendar.
I am
today.
The arts calendar?
You are.
I am the arts calendar.
Yes.
They said I was a fool to dream. After last year's historic, record-setting summer season here in Los Angeles, the Independent Shakespeare Company, ISC, has grown to be one of the largest free arts festivals in Los Angeles. This year, ISC returns to the Old Zoo in LA's beautiful Griffith Park with over 40 nights of programming. June 28th through September 2nd, audience members will enjoy full productions at the Old of the Rarely Produced... At the Old Zoo of the rarely produced Chicago play, Shakespeare play, rather, The Winter's Tale, as well as two of his most popular comedies, A Midsummer Night's Dream and A Comedy of Errors. ISC also offers programming throughout the summer, including a pre-show workshop series for families funded by the James Irvine Foundation, a variety of pre-show lectures on topics related to Shakespeare, and curtain-raising performances by numerous local musicians and dancers also related to Shakespeare. For further information, all you need to do is call 818-710-6306 or visit iscla.com. Now, there's something that I didn't know about.
Yeah, and nor did I. I'm very familiar with Ellen Gears and Will Gears.
The Theatrical Botanicum?
Yes, out there in Topanga, but not this. So
no.
This is closer and rather convenient.
Yes, and
right?
Shakespeare.
And Shakespeare.
Shakespeare outside. How do you go wrong?
It's a marriage made in heaven, I think, right?
As long as there aren't any mosquitoes.
Yes. I did, there was a golf course in Danbury, Connecticut. I grew up in Ridgefield, Connecticut. It was a golf course in Danbury called Richter Park. And we did As You Like It, which, of course, takes place in the Forest of Arden. And so it was perfect because not only there was a little grove of trees and everything, and they hung the lights in the trees and these little areas, and you just come in and out of the woods. It was the best scenery ever because it was real trees and real woods,
like
and
in the park.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was just so joyous and such a great memory.
It sounds like Wolf Trap.
Was that
Wolf Trap? Do you know back east?
No.
Just outside. It's in Virginia, as I recall, right? Just outside of D.C. It's a beautiful outdoor.
Wolf Trap.
Theater. Wolf Trap
really?
Is the name of it, yeah.
I knew a gay bar in Chicago called Wolf Trap, but I don't know.
Let's not take it to
I'm not
that
kidding.
Level.
I'm not kidding. There was a bar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no.
Oh,
was, yeah.
Well.
I wish I was making that up.
Okay.
What were you doing there?
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's
the question. I was visiting a friend.
That's the question.
Yes. I will say that there was a gay bar in Chicago that had the greatest piece of bathroom graffiti I ever saw.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else.
Oh. You never know.
No, I got to finish that line quickly. On the bathroom wall, someone had written, "My mother made me a homosexual." And underneath it, someone wrote, "If I give her some yarn, will she make me one too?" Which I just thought was brilliant.
That is.
It
that
wasn't
is,
the graffiti. It was what was added on after the fact. Yeah. That was hysterical.
That is very funny,
so,
I must say.
Anyway.
So we're going to move into
our second half hour of the show.
Yes, he has starred in over 30 films and made over 80 guest starring appearances. Appearing on Broadway, he soared to recognition in the leading role of the Pulitzer Prize-winning play Look Homeward, Angel, and in his film role in the Academy Award-winning The Miracle Worker. When Westerns were king on television, he was one of Hollywood's most sought-after stars, and beginning July 12th, as we said earlier, Los Angeles audiences will have the pleasure of seeing both he and Salome Jens as Norman and Ethel Thayer in the classic comedy drama On Golden Pond, yes, at the Glendale Center Theater. Please welcome Mr. Andrew Prine.
Thank you.
A little slow on the uptake. I'm sorry, a little slow on the uptake. Because you said Westerns, and I wanted to do this one. But I didn't have it. I was slow on the uptake, so I apologize for that little hiccup, Andrew. So I should have been right there.
Mr. Prine, sir, I have been a fan of yours for many years. I think that you are a marvelous actor, and I'm thrilled to be sitting with both of you today. Really, I am.
Marry me.
You're already married to a much better looking person than me, sir. But I hope that you are enjoying the process out there at Glendale, as we've been talking about. And I know you're working with a wonderful director, and You've got you're coming into what we call in theater Hell Week, I guess, as you approach your opening.
Yes, I call it the rehearsal tunnel. There is no other life right now. This is it.
That's it. Yeah.
And Gloria Gifford is a wonderful gal, and I'm enjoying the heck out of it, and I'm very honored to be working with Salome, and I mean that.
Oh, that, and vice versa. We're having fun.
Well, yeah. And to be friends for the many years that you have been.
We may survive the whole thing. We're going at it hard.
Well, the whole process of meeting the two of you and you, sir, and your manager, Bud Moss, who is somewhat of a legend.
And a lovely gentleman.
Of his own, and a lovely gentleman.
Just met him
indeed.
Just moments ago. And just what a
sweet guy.
There's
some synergy here.
Nice
this
guy.
All was sort of meant to be, I guess, you all coming on
I
the radio
to
show.
I have to plug Bud right away. He's got his book coming out.
Yes, he does.
And All I Got Was 10%. Bud has an incredible career in Hollywood. He not only knows where the bodies are buried, I think he buried some
of them. Oh, my.
It's going to be great. It's going to be on my Kindle, my favorite toy.
Yes. Yes.
He's going to talk about it right here. We're going to have him talk about it.
We're going to have him come back and do a show with us.
Yeah. Why am I wasting time?
Yeah, well, he'll have his own thing.
Nah, I love this guy.
No, he'll have to promote you. The exact amount of time you talk about him here, he'll have to talk about you. When
That's
we
right.
Have him on the
Absolutely.
Air. Andrew, the question that we posed to Salome earlier, I meant to get your opinion on it earlier, but the same question, theater versus film versus television. Is there a first love for you? Is there something you prefer doing?
Well, way back in the last century when I started, I only thought about going to Broadway. I was obsessed with, that's what I wanted. I never thought of coming west.
Right.
Sort of a cliche. And I was removed from the street in 1 week and put in a big hit show, and everything changed, and all the luck happened, and my dreams came true. To me, it's harder. The stage is harder than film. Oh. It scares me more, but it calls upon my best. Oh. That's where it lies for me. And so I every time I do this now, I stand at the kitchen window and stare out and say to my wife, "This is it. I'm not going to do another play. This is it." My wife says, "It's what you do. Yeah. Goodbye, dear. Well. Go." And so we go, and it's the most gratifying and scary
but you
experience.
Said, and you said that twice now. Do you still have performance anxiety about live performance?
Oh, absolutely. I have performance anxiety about driving down the street. I'm just a bag.
Oh, we are cut from the same cloth.
Absolutely.
Life is dangerous.
I don't know any actor who does not have the classic actor's dream of being caught on stage and not knowing what he's wearing and what he's doing. I have it every month, and I always have. Oh. And other guys that I know do too.
Sure.
But that's where it's at. That's when you know if you're a real cowboy. Or
well,
not.
I saw a great quote on the internet the other day about being nervous about people who have anxiety about just striving to be better and perform better.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the first part of the quote, but the second part was complete confidence. It was about being talented and trying to strive for more. And the second part of the quote was, confidence is a consolation prize for, complete confidence is a consolation prize for the less talented. Mm-hmm. It's just that when you're completely confident and you think you've totally mastered it, you really haven't because you can't totally master it.
I'm not afflicted with that. You know? Wish I were.
I saw in the, one of the joys of doing the show, I know Michael will agree with me on this, is getting a chance to read a little more about the guests that we have on. And I saw from your material that you are in one of my favorite plays of all time, which is Sam Shepard's Buried Child.
Oh, yeah.
Did you play Tilden in that?
I played the lead, Dodge. And,
oh, you played Dodge.
I brought in my own makeup people, and we did it at the Strasbourg Institute. Oh. That's not the Actors Studio. That's another nice place.
Mm-hmm. Did you see it, Salome?
I won a Dramalogue Award as Best Actor that year for it, and I put that Dramalogue Award between two pieces of bread, but my wife would need a bit of it. But I enjoyed the heck.
It's an astonishing play.
It
won the Pulitzer, didn't it? It's a Pulitzer Prize. I believe it is a Pulitzer Prize winner.
I was in a play of his that was a Pulitzer. I did it on in New York. It's the oh God, it just went out of my head. One of the latest ones, isn't it? And it won a Pulitzer Prize. It's a Shepherd play.
Oh,
I'll think of it in a minute.
Right.
I just went blank on it. But it was very interesting because God knows he's a fabulous writer.
Oh yeah, no, but Buried Child and Curse of the Starving Class and Tooth of Crime. I just when I was in college, it was sort of when Steppenwolf was just doing every single thing of anything that had Sam Shepard's name on it. Steppenwolf was cranking it out.
Yeah.
But Buried Child is probably the most difficult technical play. It's like it's written like whoever wrote it hates prop people. Because broken glass and well, Curse of the Starving Class has a live sheep.
Toward the end, he never shuts up.
Yeah,
for about 1,000 years.
Yeah,
Lie of the mind.
Lie of the mind.
Oh,
okay.
There you go.
Lie of the mind. Okay.
I saw the wheels turning over
well,
there.
Well, I just thought I can't just leave it like that.
Oh, we would have had to look it up. So.
How long has it been that, how often do you do theater? Let me put it that way.
Every year, just about. I usually go back east and do regional theater somewhere or other. I have to keep in there to prove to myself that I can still do it, that I have the guts to get out there and make a fool of myself or win. And so I keep at it. I must.
Well, I'm glad you do, because I remember a time when you were television and westerns, as we talked about in your intro.
Did a ton of them.
You'd be on two or three, guest starring on two or three shows during the same week.
Oh, yes. Well, those were the heydays of that sort of thing, and I did an awful lot of that. I was brought out to do a rodeo show called Wide Country for NBC for 2 seasons. I went into another western after that. Then I did the westerns with Duke Wayne and Jimmy Stewart and yada yada, and that went on for quite a while. And that was the most fun. The westerns are the easiest show for a man to do, and gosh, we had a wonderful time.
Did you have, before making the films that were western, is there anything about your life leading up to that that equipped you more for it? Did you ride horses? Did you grow up in a rural environment?
No, I did grow up in a rural environment in southern Georgia, but no one had horses. No one could afford a horse. They had some mules.
Yeah.
And I was a farm boy. I was raised working in the fields, and that was probably the best thing that could have happened to me, because I was never afraid of work.
Hardest work there is. I do farm work myself.
Yeah. And so I'm very grateful for that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's a cakewalk after that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after shoveling cow.
I was
going to
say, the humility factor alone must be pretty.
There's no stars on the farm. Yeah.
No, I just faked it like most actors. Anything they asked me to do, I said, oh, sure, that's all I ever do.
And you learn it furiously the night before.
Roman style, of course.
Right.
Of course. You know, completely faked it, lied all the time. You know, and it worked.
Well, we could spend the next 20 minutes just reading credits between the two of you. My goodness, what you haven't done, and what you have versus what you have done, it's just extraordinary. But so Paul had asked you that question about movies, and you said it's very different. Of course, in today, you know, somebody was telling me this recently, Paul. I meant to tell you this.
What's up?
A friend of mine, whose name is Eileen Graff, who is a television actress.
Yeah, lovely woman.
Mr. Belvedere, she was the co-star of that TV series, and she since has gone on to do some other interesting work on television. And she's currently a semi-regular on the new series, The Heart of Dixie is the name of it. It's a CW television series. And it's a hit. They just got renewed, and it's very charming, and it's about life in the South in today, you know, and life in the South. And she plays the kind of the mean mother of one of the leading young ladies in that show. She was telling me how the show. I said, congratulations, this is amazing. You know, are you having fun? She said, it's the fastest thing in television. She said, you know, doing these kinds of shows today on a network like the CW, not one of the major networks, but they're certainly putting the product out there.
Yeah.
She said, the directors are walking around now with looking at their iPads at all the shots. They expedite everything.
Yeah.
This, if you're looking at the main set in you know, that's being used in the show, which in this particular series is the, it's kind of a porch that's off the living room of the main house. On the other side of that is the other set at the diner. I mean, it's all just self-contained, all in the same studio.
Well, yeah, it's
and
a
they
very
tear them. They just
world.
Tear them down. I mean, tear them apart and put them up for the next scene, and they minimize the space that they have to rent, and you know, everything is conscientious of the almighty dollar. But the product on the screen, the end product, looks fantastic.
Yeah. Well,
you know, it looks like they've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars doing this one episode, when in fact, I'm sure they spent a nice penny, but well, not what the network series.
Look at some of these things that they're generating for the web, and I only go to it because of what we talked about earlier about some of the dreck that's on television right now and all the reality shows and that. We're really seeing a creative outlet, especially for young people on the web. And some of the little webisodes that people are putting together and these little vignettes,
right. You
would nothing, no budgets. And yet they have a wonderful production value to them. And it's really, you know, like anything else where there's so much, there's a lot of garbage too. Mm-hmm. But it's really inspiring to see some of the things that these people do.
It is the state of the arts.
I hope that the web sort of becomes like television was in the early years, where in the days of my heroes, the Jackie Gleasons, the Ernie Kovacs, the Milton Berles, where the cream just rose to the top. Mm-hmm. And it had to rise to the top because there were so few choices. There were 12 not even 12 channels when they started out.
That's true.
There were four. So I think that one of the reasons that what you're describing, where they have to, you know, share these sets and, you know, crank out these things and use everything and the almighty dollar being conscientious of that, is because they have 400 channels to fill, you know?
You're absolutely
and
right.
And I think that, but hopefully, you know, I just always get sad when I see really good things on television that just don't make it. Mm-hmm. Because of the too much. One perfect example that keeps popping back to me was this wonderful show last year with Ray Romano called Men of a Certain Age, which was a fantastic show, incredibly well written and well acted. Andre Brower and Scott Bakula. It was wonderful, but didn't make it.
Well, when I came in 100 years ago, when you did Playhouse 90 or U.S. Steel Hour and all the shows I cut my teeth on, everyone saw it. Everyone in the nation saw it because we had three networks.
Right.
And so
right.
Everyone saw what was going on. I've got four movies on the movie channels right now, and they're not bad. They're decent films. So one of them's really good. But nobody, I won't hear about it. In the old days when I walked into the grocery store, everybody would go, hey, you, I saw, you know.
Right.
Now it's not so sure. I'm not getting the credit I deserve.
What did you do on Playhouse 90? Do you remember?
Yes, a story by William Faulkner called Tomorrow. It was written by Horton Foote for Playhouse 90, and Robert Mulligan and Kim Stanley and I and Richard Boone and Elizabeth Patterson and Chill Wills and on and, you know, I just had all these wonderful...
Salome, did you do any of the Playhouse 90s?
Uh-huh, I did.
What did you do?
I don't remember, but I think it was, you know, I played a killer lawyer. My brother-in-law, Anthony Zerbe, who's a wonderful actor. He's done a couple series.
That's just something I would love to see come back, that just whole style.
I would too, Paul,
you know?
Actually.
Yeah, well, George Clooney has, I mean, we were talking about Rosemary earlier, but George Clooney has always been a real, very vocal about sort of bringing that back, because he was the one who spearheaded when they did that ER episode live and they shot it just like a Playhouse 90 thing. That was sort of just an homage to that style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd love to see more of that.
Well, but you just said something, Andy, that, forgive me, Andrew. May I call
Andy.
You Andy? Oh, thank you. That, you know, those kinds of actors that you just, you know, cited there, doing those kinds of things, live theater on television, how great is that?
I was very fortunate, as were you, Salome. We got in on the tail end of classic character actors, you know, Charles Pickford, people like that. We were always working with heavyweights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sure it's quite like that today because there are not as many roles as there used to be for certain age actors. You know, it's a little tighter.
Right.
Though there's plenty of product out there, but you know, I mean, how can you watch Playhouse 90 when you can watch Jersey Housewives? I mean. Don't even get me started. Just talk quality.
Oh,
oh Lord.
Oh.
What about directing? Does that interest you, Andrew, at all?
Not a bit. No. You just have to go to lunch with people who might eat your arm off. I'm a spoiled, old-fashioned workhorse actor. I don't spend a lot of time with people I don't want to. And directing is too much work. I want to do my dance. I am simply an actor, and I love to act. If I didn't do that, I would have starved to death. That's just who I am. I have no other. I paint, and now I've sold. I'm bragging, but I've on my website. I've now sold 2 oil paintings, and I'm just shocked.
And what's that?
Someone has such bad taste. And
what is that website? Can we throw that out there for the listeners?
AndrewPrineArt.com. One word. AndrewPrineArt.com.
Okay.
Please visit. I'm so embarrassed.
Don't be. Good Lord.
Well,
I'm not really.
You're not that embarrassed. You're holding up those cards for me to read, so you're not that embarrassed.
No, that's my passion. When you're painting, no one can tell you what to do. I have my own little studio, and I go paint what the heck I want.
Yeah.
And nobody, except my wife, tells me what.
Yes. Right. And do you paint religiously every day? Do you take time out of every day and paint?
No, but certainly about 3-4 times a week at least. Mm-hmm. And I paint with some buddies every Saturday for years, but not this month.
You paint with other people?
Yeah, paint with some pals of mine.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that. That's interesting.
That's nice.
Yeah. It must be wonderful therapy as well.
Yeah. We've been doing it forever.
Before we baptize our guests and ask them about their onstage story, I alerted them to before we started the show. Maybe they have a tale or two for us. I'm not going to go into too much detail with the dates and times, but I'll just give the important information here. This is the production of On Golden Pond at Glendale Center Theater. Website, glendalecentertheater.com. Once again, both center and theater are spelled R-E, glendalecentertheater.com. Or you can call for tickets, 818-244-8481. That's 818-244-8481. And that show is just around the corner, opening July 12th.
Right through August 11th.
And Michael, there are other things that are coming up at Glendale, the 2012 season. Do you have those at the ready?
Right after On Golden Pond closes on August 11th, the next show into the Glendale Center Theater is Little Shop of Horrors, the wonderful musical that runs August 23rd through October 6th, and followed by And Then There Were None, which is otherwise known as Ten Little Indians, one of the great Agatha Christie plays. And of course, their annual, that runs October 18th through November 17th, and their annual traditional story, A Christmas Carol, will be done at the theater, where, as we said earlier, the theater goes all out. It all becomes, you know, that time period in London and the decorations, and it's unbelievable what they do at that theater.
And it
snows for real.
Looking forward to it.
And outside of the theater.
And our theater company, Seaglass Theater, mm-hmm. we're doing a wonderful show that I was in the original cast of 20 years ago in Chicago called A Christmas Twist. It's a Dickens parody. It's very, very funny.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's a hybrid of Christmas Carol and Oliver Dickens, and just brilliantly funny. And we're looking forward to doing it. We're going to be standing outside Glendale giving our cards out for people who have just left A Christmas Carol. Salome, do you have a tale of woe or some funny little mishap that happened during performance that you could share with us?
Well, the only thing that came up for me is, you know, I did a film with John Frankenheimer called Seconds with Rock Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that I would have to get into this grape vat nude. And I said, I won't do that. I said, John, I'm not going to do that. And that was at a time when nobody got nude, except for, you know, foreign movies. So, you know, it was out of the question. And John said, all right. So Ethan would design this rig for me. It was a bathing suit that looked like it went, you know, nude. And I got to the grape stomp, and it was where people really do this every year in Santa Barbara. They do a grape stomp. And that year, they did not have enough grapes, so he had to get grapes from Texas. I think he said 80 tons of grapes. The people didn't want to be paid. They just wanted the grapes. So we get there, and I look at what's going on in that vat. And, they get in the vat. I'm supposed to get, you know, jump in, and then they're going to throw rock in after me. And they stand there, and they go, stomp that grape. stomp that grape. And I said, John, what is the scene? I said, this is ridiculous. there's nothing happening. And he said, you got to get in there. He says, it's $1 million. You got to get in there. So I said, I look pornographic with this thing, this, you know, rig on. I said, look, it was getting dark. And of course, James Wong Ha was filming it. And I said, I'm going in. But I said, I'm not going in. This looks ridiculous. I've got to go in without that suit. So I got the makeup lady to really brown me down all the way. I said, I'm going in once. Get ready. And so the time came, and it was the most difficult thing I ever did. And I threw myself into that grape bag, and I was splashing grapes all over the place and was hysterical. They threw Rock in on top of me. I grabbed a hold of him, and I wouldn't let go. And thank God Rock was really, what a lovely man. I just adored him. And he followed it through. And we made that scene work because it just happened spontaneously. But it was the most ridiculous thing.
Oh, see.
And it's the best scene in the film. Everybody remembers that scene.
Oh, now I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, look it up
as soon as I get home. I got to see that. Oh, that's hysterical. We only have 1 minute left. Can you, you got something you can fit in 1 minute?
Yeah, my darling wife, Heather, said, tell the one about Duke. And so in Mexico, the first day with John Wayne, my director came to me, Andrew McLaughlin, and he said, now, Duke may tell you what he wants you to do. And I said, no actor tells me what to do. And Andy went, oh, please don't. So Duke Wayne turned to me after we had shot, and he said, never drop your eyes as you go past camera. Keep those eyes. And I said, well, that may be the way you do it. I'll do it my way. And I thought I was off the picture. It was his picture. He owned everything, the town, the company. And so I went over and sat down and thought, I may be out of here. So the first day, Duke's tough. He came over and stood by me, and we were watching the next setup, and he said, you know, you remind me of Hank Fonda. And I said, really? I thought, this is good, Hank Fonda. He said, yeah, he was a hard-headed SOB, too. He didn't say SOB. And from then on, we got along just fine.
That's crazy.
We got along fine.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I love those.
That's very, very funny. Very funny, sir.
It has been a distinct pleasure having both
Absolutely.
Of you here. We hope that you had as much fun as we did.
We sure did. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so
you.
Much for getting us out of rehearsal this afternoon.
Yes. My pleasure. Yes.
We'll get
a little bit of juice over there.
We'll get that check from you later. Is that not going to work?
We have a price in mind.
Okay. On Golden Pond, GlendaleCenterTheater.com. Check it out. Get the tickets there. Michael, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Paul. Same here.
And we will... Oh, we should remind people very quickly.
Oh, yes.
We have next Monday off. We'll have a best of State of the Arts. Mm-hmm. And then we're switching our time to Thursdays at 1 o'clock.
That's right.
So we'll
start on the 19th of July.
As well. So thank you all, and we'll see you next week.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.